friends, this is McCall.
And this is Kyle.
And this is the final episode of Season 1 of Unboxing God.
McCall and I met at work just over 17 years ago.
Has it been that long?
Hard to believe, I know. But we really started to get to know each other October 31st, 2003, at the Halloween party of a mutual friend and coworker. And we fell in love shortly thereafter in an unexpected moment we call
the hug. At the time, I was the lead singer of a band called Vegas Jesus, and we had this performance at the El Rey Theater here in Los Angeles. Well, I asked Kyle to videotape the show, and at the end of the night, I went up to him to get my camera back and decided to give him a hug, just to say thank you, to show my appreciation. Well, I can't really tell you how long that hug lasted, but we both feel like it was a long time.
Something in that moment sparked. I didn't want to let go, and I knew that McCall didn't want to either. It honestly felt like our souls were fusing, that releasing would tear us open and we'd split apart right there.
Whoever and whatever we were going into that hug, by the time we finally let go, we weren't the same.
We were in love.
And just over a year later, we were married.
But the challenges of real life...
like getting pregnant 9 months in...
soon brought reality crashing down. Parenthood was hard, and we were ill-prepared for the strain a child would add to our relationship. In many ways, we were still adjusting to each other, and now a screaming, crying poop machine arrived to rob us of our sleep and peace of mind.
The honeymoon was truly over. And whatever character flaws we may have been covering or ignoring in ourselves and in each other soon presented in significantly damaging ways. I could be nagging and needy.
And as a response, I would escape into isolation, pulling away and drawing ever more inward into a private thought life from which I kept McCall locked out, left alone to try and decipher my thoughts and emotions with little help from me.
And we continued on in that way. Through another pregnancy, and years of what amounted to us living as roommates who were co-parenting two small children. Basically, we were miserable.
And we were making each other miserable. By this time, I was quietly trying to accept that this was now my normal. To raise two kids I was struggling to like with a woman I was struggling to love while my dreams and life seemed to slip away.
And I felt trapped. Trapped in a relationship that left me unfulfilled, trapped in a home that felt increasingly cluttered and unmanageable, and trapped in a body that felt like it was sabotaging me due to the rare autoimmune disorder I've had since I was little. I was sad, angry, lonely, and in pain.
Something had to change.
One night, while tucking our son Marley into bed, we were talking about inherited traits, things like eye color. He asked me where little kids got their laugh from. Because he explained, I don't know that I've ever heard Dad laugh. And my heart broke. You've got to understand, Kyle is and always will be a hysterically funny guy. He has a boisterous laugh. He spent years in college and early adulthood performing improv comedy in Texas before moving to Los Angeles. But through our unhappy tango, we'd managed together to stifle that laugh.
For me, I didn't have much to laugh about. I hated my job and I found little levity at home. Things felt bleak, and we likely would have gotten divorced somewhere along the way if we could have ever afforded to separate.
In that moment, I knew that whatever we were doing to each other and to ourselves was really hurting us, and that I was actually just perpetuating the toxic cycle that I had grown up in. I wanted my son to hear his dad laugh, and really I wanted Kyle to be able to laugh again.
McCall sat me down and told me that she was giving me an opportunity to do whatever I wanted, and she would support me. She had come to a place where she was willing to disentangle and let me pursue anything that I thought would make me happy, so I decided to return to comedy and take a shot at stand-up for the first time.
We live in Koreatown, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is a neighborhood made up almost entirely of Hispanics. There's a lot of Spanish in Koreatown, ironically enough. Now my son is starting to speak Spanish. The other day he came up to me and said, Daddy, why are the neighbors always jalapeno business?
was probably my first step towards creating healthy boundaries. In finally letting go of my need for the two of us to be completely overlapped in every area of our lives, Kyle was able to grow and flourish.
This freedom gave me the permission I needed to do something just for myself, that I could enjoy. It gave me energy, and I was able to start to create healthy boundaries as well. I no longer felt the need to hide my feelings or dismiss my own wants out of fear that McCall would get upset, and I no longer blamed her for my own sedentary choices.
And today, we're happier, more connected, and experience a greater sense of intimacy with one another than at any other point in our marriage. So, today, on Unboxing God, we're going to explore love and boundaries and intimacy to unbox these three ideas and how they work together to build and support healthy and rewarding relationships. I spoke with the author of Love Made Simple, his name's Juan Lee, about Kyle and my story, about our journey through that period of unhappiness, and about love in general, to get his take.
My name is Juan Lee. I live in Brandywine, Maryland. I'm about 30 miles from downtown Washington, D.C. I've been married for 23 years. We have no children. But over the last 9 years, we've cared for my dad and my wife's mother, my mother-in-law. And currently, we're still caring for my mother-in-law. She has Alzheimer's. I summarize those things, that process that you went through. If I'm humble enough to be able to understand those things need to occur. And from that perspective, now I can go through that whole process of evaluating and looking at this situation in a very objective manner because it's not based on my me. So that pushes me. And see, that's why to get to this point of love, you really have to be willing to sacrifice. You've got to be willing to sacrifice. Apart from sacrifice, you have selfishness. And when knowledge comes based on selfishness, yeah, you're in trouble and everybody else around you, okay? You've got to remove that. For love to have its place, it can't be motivated in selfishness. It has to be removed. That's the biggest thing about love, is that it's not based on self.
Don't you think that we're at a stage where we need to start looking almost in the Eastern philosophy of the yin and yang? There are two pieces of a whole that aren't really completely separate. They're entwined, they're integrated with one another while maintaining their individuality. And that it is in the union where the strength comes, not the division. I believe that in our culture, we don't believe in repairing. We believe in planned obsolescence and replacing. If something breaks, we replace it. We buy new. We don't repair it. In Japan, kintsugi is an art form of broken pottery repaired with gold.
Wow.
The idea is that you can take a bowl that has shattered, repair it with something, and it becomes priceless.
Wow.
Not replaceable. It's unique and individual because it is rejoined. It is healed. And in our culture, if we break something, we throw it out and we have a button to push to order it again on Amazon. We consume, we dispose, we replace.
It's the devaluation of one another that we can't, and we live that.
And look at marriage, though. I believe if we chose to, we could actually have a happy marriage with almost any individual that was put into our path.
Love is a choice. And the one institution that has to exemplify that is marriage. It's not about getting in it and getting out of it. It's choose to go through it. See, love is a choice that you allow to fail. You have to allow it to fail. So that means that you have to choose to go through whatever you're in presenting it. You can't say today that I love you and tomorrow I'm not ready to divorce you. It's not about the good times as much as it is about the through time. It's the total time. It's no beginning and end time to it. It's the through. Without the challenge, you have no reason to love.
And I think like faith,
It's not how you feel, it's what you do.
It's what you do and how you do it. It's the process.
And why.
But that's on the inside. You can't show the why. All you can do is exemplify the why from what you do on the outside. And that's the process. You got to make it happen. You've got to make love what you want it to be. You've got to put behind it the work necessary to exemplify what you've dictated, what you've proclaimed. You just gonna think nobody gonna tell you it, and then that's gonna be the application of it. Everything that you were talking about has to do about you making it happen. You can't just sit back and go, oh, it's gonna be because I said it. Nah, that ain't happening. You've got to put the legs on it to make it be what it is that you want it to be.
Juan is absolutely right. Love is a choice. And I'm convinced that choosing to establish and maintain healthy boundaries in a relationship is choosing love for everybody involved. So, I spoke with a really special friend of mine, Kristen Combs. She's in a new relationship with a new attitude and a new way of handling it. We talked about false intimacy and the value of having different interests within a relationship.
Hi, I'm Kristen from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. One of the things I've really realized about myself in the past and in some of my unhealthy relationships with intimacy is that I really tend to look to the other person as a fulfillment of my needs and as recognition of my self-worth. And it's twofold. There's that one side of I need them to let me know that I'm okay and that I'm safe. And then on the other hand, I tended to build relationships with people who absolutely could not provide those things because they couldn't provide those things for themselves. They were looking for the same thing from me. So we went in this endless spiral of trying to make each other feel safe when neither of us could make ourselves feel safe or loved. And I feel like it perpetuated this like addiction to abandonment and loneliness. So I had these relationships where I was deeply trying to build quote unquote intimacy, but really felt more alone than ever. And I'm now in this new place of this new relationship that feels very different with someone who is secure in themselves and in who they are, who has their own friends and their own passions and encourages me to continue to have mine. And I now have program, which is one of my passions, and sometimes in love with my work and sometimes hate it, but sometimes I'm in love with my work and have my own friends as well. And we're able to share those things with each other, but have those things for ourselves and are able to be fully fulfilled in ourselves and then bring those to each other to have this kind of just beautiful sharing of like our own joy and have that come together and support each other on the days where we're not feeling it, but knowing that we are both fully whole, capable human beings that can take care of ourselves. The kinds of things that I've been able to open up and share with him because I feel that security of knowing that he can take care of himself and I'm not responsible for that, and I can take care of myself and he's not responsible for that. I actually feel like I've been able to lean on him more for the kinds of things I wanted in the other relationships and couldn't have.
So in the past, when I've come into a relationship like that, fully fulfilled and on my own path and they're on there and we're really connected and interested in each other and we begin sharing our joy from outside resources with one another, sometimes it's like putting meat and beans and tomatoes in a crock pot for a long time and it starts to just blend and become the same. Our interests start overlapping. I start doing things they do. They start doing things I do. And the enmeshment just reveals itself after it's already pretty there. What are you doing? What conversations are you having? What tools are you applying to protect your individuality in this relationship?
Yeah, I think that's a place where I'm still learning and growing. I have it written really giant in my journal that I am learning to take up space. And I think that's what it is I'm learning to keep the things that are me and still figuring out sometimes what those things are. And I think this is one of them where I don't care if he thinks it's silly and crazy. I like it and it's important to me and I'm going to roll with it. But that is definitely still a place where I'm learning and growing.
It's interesting because while hearing you say that, I am recognizing that in past relationships, I've decided how someone needs to change in order to be the perfect person for me. And the ones that have changed, I lose interest in.
Yeah.
It's the differences that are exciting to me. And when I put them in a crock pot and melt them all together with me, they lose those differences and I lose my admiration and kind of a little bit of respect. So, of course, the opposite is true. If I have interests that don't interest the person I'm with, that's actually admirable. That's a quality that I like in other people. Why wouldn't somebody like that in me?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. When I hear someone talk about their passions and it's something that I don't know much about or care much about, but they are passionate about it, that like that joy and that wonder, it's contagious. Like you want to hear them talk about it. And I would think that anyone that I'm in a relationship with that cares about me is going to feel the same way about things that are passionates for me.
Yeah, it's honoring that boundary of where do I stop and this other person begins. I thought circles had to be aligned and the same shape and size to be my missing piece, when really it's the Venn diagram. The overlap only happens in a Venn diagram if there's places that aren't overlapped.
Yeah. You get to have your shared interests, which are awesome. And we have a lot of those too, and it's great. But those differences are nice.
All right. So, if love is a choice and boundaries create space for love to breathe, well, then I believe that's the most fertile soil for intimacy to grow. In fact, I've been developing a little theory for a while now. I call it English muffin intimacy. I presented it to Juan, who we heard from a moment ago. Take a listen. Okay, I'm going to run something by you, Juan.
Okay.
So in the past, you can imagine that my ideal and understanding of what love is, my concept of love, was pretty skewed. I used to think the best analogy for love was two pieces of Wonder Bread squished together as hard as possible so that you can't tell where one stops and the other begins, so that it's one piece, right? You take a piece of bread and you squeeze it hard and it becomes a ball and it doesn't look like two pieces of bread. It's one tight, compacted love piece. And I operated like that for a long time, many decades, in many very exciting and very painful relationships, not just love affairs, but friendships, coworkers, bosses, any kind of authority, because an authority wouldn't be able to be that other piece of bread that I could squish into me. Because they're an authority, they're separate. So how do I love that? How do I combine with that? I had a transformation in my understanding of love in the past 8 years. Now my analogy is an English muffin. English muffins are better than Wonder Bread to me because of the nooks and crannies. That's where the goodness goes. So for me, if the person I am trying to love is the other half of an English muffin to me, we have space between us where the goodness is. And I think that's where that energy, that love, that God is love resides. And for years, I was squishing out that space. And then I think as humans, at least as an individual, I bought into our consumer culture. If there's a break, if it's broken, find someone that it's not broken. Don't repair it. It's shattered. You can't ever go back to what it was. At this point, I don't want to go back to what it was. I want to evolve. And my understanding of transformation is that there has to be a loss, a death, a sloughing off of something else in order to have that new thing grow. So God and love being the space in between that connects two things, that is 100% real, is 100% there, just because you think it's empty space doesn't mean you will benefit from squeezing out that space, that air. You actually are hurting your connection, not firming it.
There's so many things going through my mind right now, because you've touched on so many things. I am so inclined to accept everything that you've said. And so that's very interesting. When you said also, what is love? Love is a chameleon. It adapts to any situation and circumstance. It takes on whatever it needs to take on for the benefit of the whole. It's that type of connecting ability. It's going to connect to it. And when you're talking about that air pockets and stuff, it's that space. You use it as it relates to pockets of nooks and crannies, those things. And I'm saying, okay, it's that thing that connects us, where you're saying it's that air and that space that connects us. I'm saying it's that ability that draws me to connect to you. Whereas is that you were using it as forced upon, whereas it's in my case, it's drawn to it.
But I was doing God's work. I was squeezing out that space between, thinking that if it connected me, then being part of it is even better. If being near and drawn to is good, connecting to, touching it is even better.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is that when you're manipulating it, it's bad. But even that space in the English muffin, when you allow it its space, there's still that connection, but that individuality is still there. And I think what you were doing was you were pushing the individuality out. And what I'm saying is that I'm coming to it. You're drawing me to your value. I'm not pressing it. I'm accepting it. I'm engaging it to the point where we're basically saying the same thing with different analogies here, but I'm basically appreciating each one's individuality, but so close to it that you wouldn't even know we were separated.
But we are.
Yes, we are, but we are.
And acknowledging that, accepting it and appreciating it before I take an action.
Absolutely.
Because other than me squishing out the air between us, I was trying to be the same thing in order to love a different thing. I had to be that thing.
Yeah.
And I was squeezing out the space between where God resides instead of honoring the differences and the similarities and the connections.
Absolutely. That's what I'm
saying. Allowing those nooks and crannies where God, like butter or jelly or whatever you like on your English muffin, rests. That
we're in the same space. We're in the exact same space. It's the ability. You found it through this space that allows us to be different, but yet connected. And I used it as a way of saying we're different. And see, the difference being is that I'm not being the forcing agent. I'm just allowing the agent to take its place, and I'm allowing myself. So I'm humbling myself to allow it to take its place, where you're saying it's okay that I don't have to make it fit. It's within the contours of love that's what makes it fit. The appreciation, all I have to do is allow the appreciation to occur, and it will inevitably happen.
So in some way, maybe those decades of squishing bread together were me being God. We're trying.
You had good intentions of wanting to do it, but you were saying, this has got to come together. And instead of allowing it to have that ability to be together, you don't have to do it. It's just allow it to. just allow it to. And from my perspective, if you just allow me to see myself as valuable, not to dismiss the fact that I'm different, but allow me to see myself as valuable.
Without being the same, without ignoring the differences.
Exactly.
Value because of the differences.
Absolutely.
Another analogy I use all the time is a chili cook-off. Who wants to go to a chili cook-off where every contestant submits the exact same recipe? Okay, granted, personally, McCall doesn't think that some of the things I've had at chili cook-off really define as chili.
Yeah.
But if I taste them, and then I taste something I do define as chili, that chili I taste is even better. So trying to have everyone make the same chili I think I like actually limits me because I am not exposing myself to other people's ideal chili that I might
even like
connect with.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I don't want it every day. Maybe that's not the chili I would make, but doesn't mean I can't taste it every now and then and appreciate it.
That ability to be able to appreciate comes from, I believe, being humble, being able to be humble enough to see outside of yourself. We've formulated a structure around ourselves to validate for whatever reason, whether it's for whatever reason, we've validated ourselves. And it's almost as though this is the only thing that we can validate. It's the only, you either got to be like this or it's not. I can't accept any other way because this is the way that works for me. And that just limits us in being able to experience and accept other people and other circumstances.
In last week's episode on Awe and Wonder, I spoke with my new friend and Brigham Young University professor, Mike Richardson. Here's a little bit more from our conversation about love and boundaries.
Simultaneity is really an interesting concept for me, that a lot of our life exists at this border, at the boundary between us and others and us and God and things like that. And so instead of boundaries separate us, but they also connect. This computer separates us, but it also connects us. But at the same time, I can be helpless and infinitely powerful if I understand what's going on. And for me, it creates an interesting thing where we have power flow through us by allowing rather than by controlling. And thinking about this and then going back to the creation story, it's interesting. It's fascinating to me that even God says, let there be light, right? He doesn't say there must be light. He says, allow there to be light. And when he opens space, he and she open space for light to emerge, light emerges. God, who we consider all powerful, I think often talks in terms of allowing rather than forcing something to happen.
Well, the Kabbalah creation myth is that creation happened in the space between God's inhalation and exhalation, that there's a space there. And that is my theory of intimacy, ironically enough. I'm big on visualizations. Visuals incorporate thoughts for me, and they come on much quicker than complete sentences. So now I have a theory of English muffin intimacy. Where does all the good stuff come from in an English muffin? The nooks and crannies. That's where it gets toasty, and that's where the butter and go. And for me, in any relationship, if I leave nooks and crannies, what fills it is the divine. And what connects me to the other part is God.
Yeah, I like that. It resonates with something that I've been writing about lately and writing again on the subject this week. But relational liminality, or the liminal is the what's at the boundary, what's at the border. And so thinking about this, okay, so I live in Utah, you live in California. So what shapes Utah and what shapes California? Well, Utah is shaped by Colorado and Nevada and Idaho and Wyoming and Arizona. You're shaped by Oregon and Mexico, Nevada and the ocean. And so at the same time as being absolute individuals, we are created by each other. And where are we created by each other? We're created at the boundary. And that's the space. It's the space between us, right? The space between us is what simultaneously connects us and separates us. And those boundaries can be rigid. If I decided, hey, let's push the boundary of Utah over into Colorado, well, we'd have a civil war on our hands or something if we didn't do it by consent. Sometimes boundaries can be changed by consent. Boundaries can also be porous. You can have a rigid boundary, but influence flows across it. And that's where you're, again, with your English muffins, there are spaces for influence to flow through. So at the boundary of Idaho, Utah is a very different state than it is at the boundary of Arizona. It's different influences are flowing across. And then the boundary can also be transparent. It could be rigid and non-porous, but something still flows through. And that's the light or the ability to see something. A window reveals and hides at the same time. I can't feel the breeze on my face. There's no pollen, but I can see things from the safety of my space. And so I think when we think about relationships, we can think, and it's, I think it includes a relationship with God, is how rigid is the boundary? How porous is the boundary? And how transparent is the boundary? And what happens when we play around with those, making it more porous or more transparent or less? What is revealed and what is concealed at the boundary, at that space between us?
Ironically or synchronistically, I'm a sponsor in my program. And whenever boundaries come up with a sponsee, I like sharing my idea of boundaries, which is, again, a visualization. But I think of a boundary as a fence with a gate around a garden of growth. Some days my garden is feeling strong. The stalks and roots are implanted and you can walk through and check it out without injuring things. However, if it's a pack of dogs coming down the street, it would be wise to close the gate. I don't want a secret garden. I want bypassers to be able to see, like you said, transparency. I want a slatted fence that people can admire my garden and that I control the fence of who comes in and when. And that is a lot of responsibility to have that right. With great power comes great responsibility, I think some superhero once said.
I like that. I really like that. It helps me to also visualize this sort of tension between our need to be on our own journey and the need for community. And it's odd that we divide that because, again, just like self and other, those create each other. The individual is created by the community and the community is created by the individuals. You don't want to be the Borg, right? Where individuals completely lost in the group. That's the bread that you talked about being smashed together. But you also don't want to be isolated and alone.
Since this is the final episode of season one and all, I figured let's pack in the guests. Make sure you check out the show notes at www.unboxinggodpodcast.com so you can find out a lot more about all four of my guests. And heck, me and Kyle too, if you'd like. I caught up with a dear friend, Sarah, from my church days. Yes, I had church days. Today, Sarah Goodson is the CEO and an executive coach at 3 Beats Consulting. She had some wonderful thoughts that resonated with me. Will you tell me a little bit about your idea of boundaries, what they are for you, and how they help relationships?
Just like anything, Nicole, I think there's two components. It's the inner experience and the outer experience. And so when it comes to boundaries, there could be quite literally a checklist of, I only call this person once a week, right? Or I don't pick up the phone when so-and-so calls. I let them leave a voice message. And then when I feel prepared to call back, I do. Like there could be behavioral things that take place. Then on the other hand, there's the internal experience. So I liken it to food, right? Like to people who go to Weight Watchers. Such a great program, such a great community. And you can follow all of the rules of here's what you eat, here's what you count, here's what you do, and weigh in. And you can check all the boxes on the outside. But until your insides start to shift in your relationship to your body, your relationship to food, your relationship to your life, which is where all of that stems from, any sort of food or any processed addiction. It's like until the insides shift, you will always be the fat girl in the skinny body, right? Like to just put it bluntly. And so I think about that the same way with anything. And so with boundaries, what are the outside things that you need in order to feel grounded, in order to feel safe, in order to feel like this is a mutual relationship where there's not like a power dynamic that's going on, if possible. And then it's the internal piece of how do I need to take care of myself? what practices do I need to have in place to feel like I can trust myself in this friendship or this relationship or this dynamic.
One of the pieces that you said you worked on specifically was being a woman of your word to yourself first and then to others.
Yeah.
So my idea of boundaries, I used to put up walls to protect me. They weren't really boundaries because you can only draw a boundary around something that you define. I kind of wanted to jump over the work of defining my values that the boundaries were actually protecting, because that means I'd have to look at myself, not other people. And I wanted to look at other people and build walls around people who didn't feel safe or whatever. Do you have a sense like that as well?
Yeah. And it's something I haven't thought about for a really long time. And I think that's a testament to like the inner work, honestly, of knowing myself right. So well, you know, like I have a real problem, especially like in, again, going back to church world. And I think a lot of people talk about it in this way, like you got to fight for your freedom and for your peace. You've got to go to battle for this. You got to suit up. I tend to go more towards the more Buddhist mystic route of like create a boundary when someone's crossed it. But you don't need to necessarily go in with that, necessarily, like to know thyself and to know when, ooh, that doesn't feel good. And to know that anytime I have a reaction to someone else, it's because of me. If there's a problem, I'm the problem. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to go along with what this person is saying or sharing, or like I'm going to allow myself to be further triggered or hurt or anything like that. But if I'm offended by someone, or if I feel upset by what someone asks, what is it inside of me that's being touched on?
I called my sponsor once and said, oh, my mother is really pushing my buttons. And she said, what are you doing with buttons? Oh, this is me. It's my buttons that are the problem, not my mom pushing them. Okay. I call those Dr. Carrasco moments. Dr. Carrasco's mirror from Don Quixote is when they hold up all their shields and he can see that he's an old withered man fighting windmills, not dragons. And my tool is bless them, change me.
Oh, that's a great tool.
Because yeah. I see it.
So
I can't help but see it. So I got to honor that and say, bless them. Help them, be with them. I know they have a higher power too, but do something about it with me.
You know, I think I defined this maybe 5 years ago. My deepest desire in this lifetime, in this body, in this curriculum I've been placed in and given, my deepest desire is inner peace. And what I've discovered over the last few years specifically, A, becoming a mom has really shifted my world. I like a simple life. I like my handful of friends. My business is its own thing, and I nurture that as well. And then the death of my friend who was murdered 3 years ago, Jen, and those two experiences of holding life and experiencing the death gave me that glimpse into, right, the finiteness of what life is, and also really gave me kind of a fearlessness of, this is what I got. So how do I want to use it? How do I want to use life? How do I want to show up for this? And I'll share with you that a couple of tools that are helpful. There's a YouTube, it's like 20 minutes, and they walk through this concept of like the different layers, right? The mental layer, emotional layer, spiritual layer, and what all those mean and what the levels of consciousness are. And he talks about the idea of like, when you say I'm upset because, it's never about that outside thing. It's always about you, which is what we've been talking about. Yeah. So two of the tools that have been most helpful for me, one's called an ideal scene and the other is called compassionate self-forgiveness. Now, compassionate self-forgiveness is a process by which you really get to explore inside. What are all of the judgments, complaints, upsets, frustrations, like what are all the things about myself and other people and what's happening in the world and what's happened in my life? What are all the upsets? And then centering yourself in your heart, opening up to the spirit. And it's these very simple words. I forgive myself for buying into the misunderstanding that ... I'm a bad person because I am an addict. I'm a bad mom because I drank too much last night, or whatever it might be, right? So it's, I forgive myself for buying into the misunderstanding that ... or I forgive myself for judging myself or someone else as ... And what it starts to do is it starts to separate the person from the behavior and yourself from identifying with something, right? So like, I forgive myself for judging myself as unlovable because like this would be true for me, like a real thing. Like I forgive myself for judging myself as being unlovable because I've had a torrid past and I don't deserve to have the business I have right now because I've really hurt people in the past. So I might go through some misunderstandings, some judgments, and this has a way of just getting to the core of like, what is it really? What is the misunderstanding and what is the judgment? And then you go into the truth. The truth is, I've always been doing the best I can. The truth is, I've never been separated from the love of spirit. The truth is, life has always unfolded for me in the most perfect way for my highest good and everyone's highest good always. So that's the healing balm. Now, doing this practice, you know, it first started off doing like a weekly, like collect all my judgments and misunderstandings and then run the process. It would be a longer thing and it'd be more emotional for me. And now this is something when I go to pee, you know, it's the thing that I do when I feel like I messed up as a mom, or I was snippy with my husband, or I feel like maybe I said the wrong thing to that friend. It's like, oh, I can just run self-forgiveness.
So basically, at first you had to do a step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and now you just have to do 10 and 11? That's really what that is, right?
What do you
mean? Right. Step 4, taking my inventory, when I write down all my resentments or my fear, or my sex inventory, I'm writing down all the things that bother me, that upset me, right? In other people and in myself and in fucking Amazon not delivering a package that I paid for. Institutions, everything. Marriage, the idea of what a mom is and my beef with me not getting one as defined by what, fucking Disney? And then going through that list and owning my part in it. Even if my part is 2% of the problem, owning 100% of my part changes how I relate to that experience, to that problem. And then I have to go through a whole telling someone else and God. Step 5, releasing my defects, naming them, giving them to God, letting them be fully removed. And then making amends where it wouldn't hurt somebody. Once I've done that, in order to somewhat avoid that, I do a nightly step 10, if not an hourly step 10 and 11. So step 10 is looking back over my day and where did I feel anger? Where was I hurt? Where could I have caused anger? Where could I have caused hurt? Where was I not authentic or honest with my words, or clear even, which is a form of dishonesty? Where did I jade, justify, argue, defend, and explain because I didn't feel secure with what I was saying because I didn't process it first? Where didn't I pause? And giving that away at the end of the day allows me to rest restoratively. And when I wake up, it's a new day. It's not yesterday part two. This is a whole new day that I start over. And if I do step 11, conscious contact, praying only for knowledge, not understanding, knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out with conscious contact, my feet hit a ground that isn't this ground, it's Waldo's. It allows my feet to be on the ground and my head somewhere else. And that process, if I do it daily, it's like maintaining your car. I don't have to take a beater in to have it refurbished with steps 4 through 9. As long as I keep the oil checked every day, I shouldn't have to do that restoration anymore. So the first time we do that work, is thorough and it feels a little like soul surgery. But if you maintain those maintenance steps of 10 through 12 and do it on a daily, when you pee or wash your dishes, if you're conscious, then it doesn't build up to the point where you need to do that kind of soul surgery.
Yep. That's a great way to put it. Soul surgery.
Hey, I'm Cass, and I've been thinking a lot about the importance of boundaries in any relationship, from friendships to marriages, dating relationships, family. McCall uses the English muffin analogy a lot, but I've always had one that I've carried with me for as long as I can remember. I have a massive sweet tooth, so ice cream cake was the first thing that came to mind. And it has to be a very specific kind of ice cream cake too. As cool as the Carvel one is, I'm talking the one that is like equal parts like fresh baked cake and ice cream. And I always used to describe relationships, healthy relationships, like an ice cream cake. Cake by itself is wonderful. And ice cream by itself is wonderful. They are two very different things. They go through different processes to be made who they are. Ice cream needs to be kept cold. Cake needs to be baked. But when you put them together, you make something that is really different and yet entirely comprised of two individual solid things that make something even greater than the two individual parts were themselves. And I think that's a little bit like what having boundaries looks like. There's something that I read up about this year called deselfing. And deselfing occurs when one gives up things that are core to who they are in order to fit in or maintain an important relationship. I can't take credit for this. Dr. Paula Wilborn, who's a clinical psychologist, she actually coined the term and helps us to understand this phenomenon. And I found myself in a few different relationships, not just intimate relationships, but in family relationships and friend relationships, losing myself. And I started to, when I read this article, I just had this sense of, holy crap, this is what's been happening. This is why I feel so out of sorts, why I feel depressed, why I feel not my best self, because I don't have myself anymore. It's only in the spaces where I have learned to have a faith that is mine and mine alone, and I'm not riding on the coattails of anybody else's belief or interests and hobbies that are mine that I get to share and be excited about. And even a recognition of what I will and won't accept that may be different from someone else's. When I have a solid sense of what that is and what that looks like, I'm able to give my best self to other people. I think sometimes we have the unfortunate thought that having boundaries is a selfish thing. And similar to McCall, I definitely am someone who has been in the habit of building walls rather than having healthy boundaries. And I'm unlearning, as I unbox God, I'm unlearning what a boundary is supposed to look like or feel like. I know that boundaries can be flexible. I know that they can be porous. I know that they can allow space for really healthy communication and breathing room that ends up nourishing and enriching a relationship rather than choking it out. So rather than de-selfing, I've had a lot of time and space to become my most full self. The version of me that can say, yes, I want this. No, I don't want this. Yes, this is okay. No, this is not okay. When I'm able to hold on to the core of who I am, I'm in the best position possible to share that with others. They get the best version of me, and it is the most unselfish thing in the world to recognize that I get to have boundaries, and I get to take up space, and I get to allow myself to speak up for myself. And from there, other people get to hear me and we get to have a dialogue rather than shutting each other out. From that place of health, people get the most authentic version of me, and authenticity is something that I've always valued. So rather than giving them a mask or a false version of myself, I get to give them me fully because I'm allowing myself to be me fully. And isn't that what it's all about? Isn't intimacy sharing your most true self with another person or with other people or with God?
Well, this certainly has been an amazing, challenging, and incredibly fulfilling journey over the last 7 months. But I want to take this time for a special moment of gratitude shout-out. First, Kyle. Thank you for showing enthusiasm about the idea of me doing a podcast in the first place and for supporting me all the way through 36 episodes, emotionally and with editing. A huge thank you to Amanda from Jam Street Media, who gave this show its original jumpstart, and to all of the people who've worn the hat of mentor for me along the way. This shit ain't easy, and it's taken a lot of help. Thank you to those of you who've given it to me. Thank you to Marley, my son, who led us through the hero's journey, and to Harper Joe, who made sure we made a few dollars with a sponsor ad, but especially to my two UBG Casses. To Cassini, you are my soul's sister. You're an incredible wordsmith and musician extraordinaire. Last but not least, my guest co-host for all things stoic or gender, my flaxen-dreaded and yoga-doing doula, Mama Cass. I couldn't have done it without you, and I'm not sure I would have wanted to. Finally, to those of you who've supported Unboxing God with financial contributions, feedback, or your voice. I began this adventure with only a promise to open all the doors Waldo put in front of me with an open heart and mind, leaning into my fears and daring them to do their worst. But along the way, I forgot I was scared at all, and Waldo just kept feeding my wonder and my awe. The overlaps and crazy coincidences have been entirely too abundant to just shrug off. So, just for today, I'm going to let myself say, it's been too odd not to be God. So thank you for showing up, Waldo, when I finally got the balls to look for you.
It's certainly been an adventure, and I really want to say how impressed I've been by you throughout the course of season one. From getting set up, to the website, to Facebook audiograms, show notes and resources, apart from some editing assistance by me and hosting an interview assistance by Cassidy, you've basically been a one-woman machine grinding week after week to put out the best podcast possible. I love you, and I'm so proud of you. Tell the listeners what's in store for the future of Unboxing God.
We are about to take a holiday hiatus. Over the next few weeks, I will be brainstorming over some ideas that have been percolating throughout these past few months. So now is the time to follow Unboxing God on social media or subscribe by email on our website. I just don't want you to miss any of the big announcements and upcoming Waldo-inspired projects. From now until New Year, we're going to be making all of the full recorded conversations with guests from Season 1 available to Patreon supporters. And let's be honest, I think we're going to probably have a couple bonus un-episode treats for your holidays as well. So, if you aren't subscribed yet, now would be a great time to do that.
Sounds like there's plenty to look forward to. In the meantime, please visit the website at unboxinggodpodcast.com and feel free to drop a note or leave a message.
I really do love connecting with listeners, and I'll do my best to get back to you right away. Until next season, this is McCall.
And this is Kyle.
Saying bye for now.